Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
A lot of people know him as Grunny. He's also called a treetop lover. It's treetop. Tim Gunhard.
I can't get to a treetop.
Do you see Davis Mills' neck by any chance? Did you take a look at this quarterback's neck last night?
No.
You need to.
Somebody get hurt?
No.
Did he have a Harvey Williams neck?
Well, see, that's what people ask, but no. Harvey Williams' neck was too skinny. You tell me.
I'm looking. Is this a guy from Marshall or from
Stanford? You tell me.
Stanford. Oh.
Wasn't he from Stanford?
Yeah. No, he's a Stanford quarterback. Yeah.
Okay.
You Davis tell me Mills. He went in the third round this year. How does this compare to Harvey Williams' neck?
That is a long neck, but there's a little bit of girth to it.
Yeah, I know. That's like a tree trunk.
It looks like he might have a couple thyroid issues.
Length and girth.
Go ahead and clip that for future use and all that.
Yes.
I have something that just happened or made official over within the last hour that I get to ask you about, Timmy. Mm,
sure.
And I want you just to be honest. You can give the perspective of a former NFL player, but also of a true football fan because you love it. Mm-hmm. The NFL has just sent out an official memo.
Official?
It is. It has the logo on it. Oh, that's how I know it's official.
The shield.
Super Wild Card Weekend to include Monday night game beginning this season. Hmm. Jake just farted or he doesn't like this. He has a very frumpy look on his face. Hmm. Now, the NFL has announced that beginning with the 2021 season, Super Wild Card Weekend will conclude with a game on Monday night. The NFL expanded the playoffs last season for the first time since 1990, adding a third wildcard team in each conference, and in the process creating Super Wildcard Weekend, 3 wildcard games on Saturday and 3 on Sunday. With the addition of a Monday night game to the 2021 playoffs, Super Wildcard Weekend will now have 2 wildcard games on Saturday. They will have a 3:35 kickoff and then a 7:15 kickoff. Then on Sunday, 12:05, 3:40, and 7:15, 3 games. And then on Monday night, 7:15, Monday Night Football playoff game, Wild Card Weekend. Tim Grunhard, do you love it or do you hate it?
Well, I understand why they did it. It just seemed like they were cramming all those games in, like 3 games a day. And it felt rushed. It just felt like there was just a ton of programming, and I think people kind of maybe missed out because, I mean, you had the whole day to kind of separate and watch NFL football, and that's obviously what they want. So Monday night would make sense that you could cut down one of the Saturday games and then move it to Monday night. The only problem I have with the Monday night game is now the winner of that game, how does that roll? I mean, that is a distinct disadvantage of playing on Monday night.
Make them play on Saturday.
Yeah, well, they're probably playing on Sunday, but still, it's just, I mean, it just gets you out of your rhythm. It gets you out of your pattern. It gets you out of kind of the way that you conduct and do your week. The guys are very superstitious, and, you know, Monday nights and Thursday night games are a outlier, and you have to kind of change things up. The last thing you really want to do when you get to the playoffs is kind of change things up and kind of go away from what you've been doing. But I understand why the NFL did it. I think that a lot of people will watch, but I'm just not a huge fan of that move.
Timmy doesn't like it. What about you two silly son of a guns? What do you think of the new super-duper wildcard weekend?
Well, I don't have to deal with a daily schedule as an NFL player, so I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
As a consumer, it's terrific. I totally understand what Grunny's saying, but hey, not my problem.
Let's get the gambler's perspective. What about the heavy gambler Jake Gutierrez? Do you enjoy a 3-day wildcard weekend now, or do you like the way it used to be?
I don't know how I feel about it.
Well, we need your opinion on the radio now, please. What's your gut tell you?
I guess it's another day, which is fine. But I kind of like it all compact, so you know what the week's going to look like. You know what the matchups are going to be. It kind of just leaves something undone to me. It's supposed to be wild card weekend. not wild card week plus Monday. Mm-hmm. I mean,
that'd be a weird way to present it.
Wild card weekend plus Monday coming up.
Plus one. Plus one.
But that's what it is.
But yeah. Then you get a show. I don't know. Showcase. No, it extends. You know. Then we come back on Monday. We got one more.
Give me one more night with football,
for
baby.
For what we do here, it's great. I'm not going to.
What exactly would you say we do here?
We make a lot of Michael Cox jokes.
Did you guys watch last night? Speaking of the gambler, Kenny Rogers and
the
Dolly
pitcher
Parton,
or the.
They did like an hour special.
No,
Kenny
I didn't
and Dolly.
See that.
They did the Gambler, so I thought about Jake.
No, I was gambling on the
right.
Carolina
That's
Panthers.
That's the Gambler right
eight.
There.
You had the over, too, though, didn't you?
Well, I didn't. No, you asked me which one I preferred.
I talked you out of it, though, because I said Davis Mills, despite his long neck, would not be able to score enough points.
I said I liked Carolina minus eight. If you're making me pick, I would take the over.
I didn't watch 1 second of that game, but I do have McCaffrey in my fantasy team.
No, you don't.
Like 6 points.
Not anymore.
Nope.
Yeah. He got hurt. He's out.
Is he out for the season?
No, he's out for a while. Strained hamstring.
He's always out.
Hammy.
Why do you have him on your team then?
He's always out.
I don't know.
Explain
he's
that.
Like my first pick, too.
And
most,
so Carolina,
first pick.
Carolina wins. They go 3-0, but they lose Christian McCaffrey to a strained hamstring, and then they're the number 8 overall pick, the first defensive player taken in the draft who has looked phenomenal so far, J.C. Horn, the corner out of South Carolina, broke multiple bones in his foot. Now he's going to be out for a while, so a costly victory for Carolina, but 3-0.
Did he look better than the certain Raven rookie from Penn State that made a nice play in the game?
Why'd you do that?
Number 99, I believe his number is. I can't say his name, so I'm not even going to try. Oh.
There you go.
Sounds
nailed it.
Pretty
to
close.
Me.
Yeah.
I like it.
Uh-oh. That's what his name should be from now on here in Kansas City. Uh-oh.
Just going to get right into it, aren't you?
Get right into it.
The same thing with you that I did with Stan Weber. Because these coaches were talking yesterday.
Yes, they were talking.
They had their feet
they
to
were
the fire,
talking.
I think they did. Okay, this is what I want to hear from you.
All
okay.
Right.
We're going to play this. I want to hear the Spags number 3. Because people
is this
keep
when
asking,
you kept talking about number 1?
I don't think so. Is it?
Well, listen, I think this is the one where you keep saying Juan.
Oh, yeah, Juan.
It sounds like Juan. Yeah. Like literally the first 20 seconds of it, I'm like, who's number 1 is he talking about? I want you guys to listen and tell me if he doesn't sound like he's saying number 1.
There's a lot of people that wish Thornhill was running with the ones instead of getting 11 snaps for the defense. Okay, so Spags was asked by, and who do you think asked? What Bulldog Red Ass reporter asked him about this? Todd Lebo. That's what he does out there. Todd Lebo asked Steve Spagnuolo about Sorensen and Thornhill and the input from the coaching staff and how they decide upon the snaps and who plays and who doesn't, because Thornhill only had 11 snaps against the Ravens. Here is Spags.
Yeah, there's dialogue on that all the time. Juan's done a good job. He's had spurts of good football. But when you talk about what you're asking about is a position change. A position change is going to be merited when somebody's not playing well, and we need improvement there. I mean, if you ask Dan, I'm sure he'd tell you he wants to play better. If you asked any of the 11 guys that play the positions on defense, I'm sure they're going to tell you they want to play better. Juan's done some good things for us. He just needs to earn his way back. We talked, Juan and I had a conversation on Tuesday. The game, obviously, the first game, Tyron didn't play, so Juan was out there a lot. In this game, Tyron's coming back, and Dan's in there. So what did happen is we, you know, in the packages that Juan is in there for, we weren't in them very much. I mean, Baltimore kept us in our base package, and it's just two safeties out there. So we'll see where it goes. We're going to need, before it's all said and done, we're going to need everybody. Juan, Dan, everybody.
Now, before you answer, and I know that people heard this and then tweeted at us, well, Sorensen has missed 11 tackles, which is the defender with the second most missed tackles in the NFL, according to Pro Football Focus, has 6. So 11 missed tackles, and so you said it's only warranted when someone's not playing well. So someone asked, well, what about Sorensen and the missed tackles? And so then Todd Lebo followed up and asked Spags about Sorensen's missed tackles. And I think it was, I'll give him credit, even though it hurts me. Nice job by Todd Lebo with the follow-up. Here's what Spags had to say.
To me, what I think that is with Dan is just a little bit coming under control. The one thing we love about Dan is he's not going to miss a tackle being soft. That's not a bad thing, you know. And I think once he gets himself, I believe, I'd have to go back, but I'm almost certain the same thing happened to Dan last year. No preseason games. We came out for the first two games. I remember the missed tackles were there last year, too. And Dan became, you know, really one of our consistent, most aggressive tacklers. So we're not ready to panic on that right now, and I know he's not.
So, Timmy,
a lot to digest.
Right. For the people that want to see more Juan Thornhill, are we just stupid? Is there meat on that bone? Is it a real topic we need to talk about? You take away some things from Spags. He said Juan has given us some spurts of good football. He's done some good things. He's got to earn his way back. And then he talks about Sorensen. Well, he's not going to miss tackles soft. You know,
let's address these one at a time. So your first question is more Juan Thornhill or right. No? So what Spags said, and I do agree with this part of it, is that Dan Sorensen usually is a pretty good tackler. I think just like everybody else in the NFL right now, tackling is abysmal. I think Sorensen's tackling is abysmal right now. I think Frank Clark addressed it a little bit, how the Chiefs really have one day a week that they work on kind of the tackling aspect because they're in full pads. And even in that day, they don't really put a lot of emphasis on it. And I think that will be something they change this week. Spags actually said that, you know, hey, we tried to address it as much as we could with tackling last week. You know, we can't go out there and scrimmage, which is true. But you can't just go in there and tag off, and that's what they're doing. Tagging off means they're basically going up there and they'll throw their hands and, like, tag the guy and act like they're tackling him. Well, it just doesn't work very well when you get into a physical game like the Chiefs have played in their first two opponents. Their first two opponents would probably be the worst-case scenario for a team that needs to work on tackling. You know, Cleveland and Baltimore are both teams that are going to run right down your throat. They're going to be physical with the run, and then, you know, Lamar Jackson's going to make you look silly if you don't have good technique and fundamentals in your tackling. So there is that. So Dan Sorensen, listen, there's really no excuse for some of the mistakes that were made. It reminded me of, remember the Titans, when the guy ran off the field and asked for Petey to play because he couldn't cover the guy and couldn't tackle the guy that was going across the field. You remember that guy came off and goes, I can't cover him, coach. I can't tackle him. Well, go get Petey. Well, they probably should have went and got Juan because I just don't think that Dan's athleticism and tackling at that point in the season, that point in the game, was very good. It was blatantly obvious to everybody that Dan Sorensen was struggling a little bit with tackling the space against, and it was Hollywood Brown was one of the guys he had to cover, and then, you know, also Lamar Jackson in space is not an easy guy to tackle. So I think that they probably would have done better if they had the opportunity to put one in. Now, listen, he really kind of gave away the goods when he said that, you know, Juan is in some certain packages, but Baltimore, they did it on purpose now, guys. This isn't an accident, and they're like, wow, we really got away with one. They put personnel in that the Chiefs had to match up with Dan Sorensen in there. So, you know, with their heavy package or with a heavy run package, you know, the Chiefs usually will go with Dan Sorensen because he is an aggressive tackler, and usually he's a pretty good tackler, but he has struggled so far this year, like a lot of people have struggled so far this year. So Baltimore did a really nice job of keeping certain personnel on the field that they could take advantage of, and they did. It's as simple as that. When you get to the next question, which was?
And so the missed tackles by Sorensen.
Yeah.
But the other thing, you mentioned the spurts of good football from Thornhill. Right. He does some good things, but he has to earn his way back.
Yeah, so in the NFL, and really, the only way that, listen, it goes back to the, I hate to even bring it up.
I wish you would.
It goes back to the Gerback Gannon.
Boy, I wish you wouldn't.
You can't lose your spot by injury, and it's in the NFL, they're going to give you the benefit of the doubt for a couple of games if you're the starter. He was named the starter, okay? So they're giving him the benefit of the doubt that, and Spags made a couple excuses for him. Number one is that, you know, Dan's usually a pretty good tackler and he'd like to play better. And, you know, as the season went on last year, he got better in tackling. I do think that you're going to see Juan Thornhill more on the field. It wasn't really good English. You're going to see him on the field more just because of different packages that are going to be coming out against the Chiefs, offensive packages against their defense. When you're going against Baltimore and Cleveland, it's a heavy run package, so you're really going to have two safeties. Really won't be a nickel on the field. You're probably adding another linebacker, which takes Juan Thornhill off the field. Now, if Dan Sorensen continues to tackle poorly, if he continues to struggle in his coverage, or continues to, you know, not get home and blitzes, then you're going to see him move. But what Spags is saying and what the defensive staff is saying is, hey, listen, you know, this is our starter. We're going to go with him until he shows that he can't do it anymore. And is that point here yet? I don't know. That's debatable. But according to the Chiefs, it's not here yet. But I promise you, they're not doing, you know, we can't take Dan out because we want to hurt his feelings. That's not happening. All right, so if Juan Thornhill you know, continues to progress and Dan continues to struggle, then you'll see Juan Thornhill in there. But it's everybody. Everybody tackling right now in the NFL is very, very poor. So, you know, when they go up against the Chargers this week, I think you'll see more Thornhill in there. And it won't be any indication that they're pissed at Dan Sorensen. I think you'll see Thornhill in there more just because of matchup defenses against that offense. When you got Keenan Allen and you have Williams and you have Eckler and you have those guys that like to catch the ball, you need more of a coverage guy in there. So I think you'll see Thornhill more in the game. So everybody out there right now are going to be saying, you know, we were complaining, we were moaning, we were, you know, that, you know, Thornhill needs to get in there. Look, they put him in there. Well, no, it's not really it. It's because of matchup issues. You got to understand that defensive coordinators have different packages that they're going to throw against different formations and different looks that you get offensively, and Lamar Jackson and Baltimore kept the Chiefs in a defensive package that contained Dan Sorensen. I think they did it on purpose.
So one of the things that Spags also said there was, you're asking about a position change.
Yep.
And he's basically saying that right now Thornhill plays backup to Tyrann Mathieu, right?
Right.
And that Dan Sorensen, even though they're both safeties, they play different positions. And I put that together with Andy Reid doesn't say much, but he's been asked about this whole situation a couple times too, and the only thing he has said is, well, you know, they each have their particular strengths. Thornhill's good at certain things, and Sorensen's good at other things. When I put those two comments together, what I'm hearing from them is Dan Sorensen's strengths work at this position, and Thornhill's strengths work more as Tyrann Mathieu's position. And when I look at the contract impasse between Mathieu and the Chiefs, they haven't extended him yet. It starts to look to me like, now Juan Thornhill is the heir apparent to Tyrann Mathieu. That's his position. He's been drafted here to replace Tyrann Mathieu when we can't sign him to a contract extension. Is that a fair assumption to make? And how different would it be, like, in terms of asking him to do Sorensen's job instead of Mathieu's job?
Yeah, so Sorensen's job is he is a what we call a box safety. He's the extra guy in the box. So they'll bring him up whether they want to get seven guys in the box or eight guys in the box in order to stop the run. So they'll bring him up in a position where he can support the run and is usually a pretty consistent tackler. Now, once again, he has not shown that this year, and when you're the box safety, or you're the safety that they walk up into the box in order to limit the run, and you're missing tackles, that is a bad thing. And guess what? The Chiefs have shown that because they've given up, I don't know, 400 or 500 yards of rushing in the first two games. So they have struggled at all levels against the run in tackling and gap responsibility and all the different logistics you need to do to stop the run. They've struggled with that. That's plain and simple. So I don't think that they feel as comfortable putting Juan Thornhill up in a position where he's basically a linebacker, A, because maybe he just doesn't feel comfortable up in that area, B, maybe because of the injuries he's had, that they're like, listen, why would we put this guy up there, and all of a sudden he has an opportunity to get taken on by an offensive tackle? That wouldn't be good for his legs.
Am I crazy, but didn't he play next to Tyrann Mathieu his rookie season? Wasn't he playing free safety?
He did, but they brought Tyrann up more into the box at that point, and they put him at safety.
Oh, okay.
And therein lies, well, whether it was it was Dan Sorensen, was he banged up? B, listen, I'm not here to stick up for Dan Sorensen. I'm not, because, you know, I think he's played poorly, and I don't think he's athletic enough in space to cover some of the guys in the NFL right now. I'm just telling you what Spags' theory is.
I get it.
Now, to your theory, Yes, they did. And they what they did is they brought Tyrann Mathieu up into the box as that box safety. And I thought he did a pretty good job at that. But maybe, just maybe, they're thinking, okay, listen, do we want to take our defensive captain and leader who's coming off of COVID and coming off of, you know, some injury deals he's been dealing with and put him up in there? I don't know. That's kind of where I'm looking. But to your point, yes.
That they defense did, they, was better in 19.
They were. They were better. Well, they were better when he came up. In 19, they stunk early in the year.
Early
Remember
in the
that.
Year, but when Thornhill was playing a lot more, when he was on the
and
field
Thornhill
more.
Played really good in the first game, I thought.
And then Thornhill got hurt, and then the playoffs he wasn't available.
Right,
remember?
Right.
And so we're,
yeah. But like late in the season, he showed a lot of things, and you saw a lot less Dan Sorensen.
And felt like they had developed into the one of the best safety tandems in the league.
Right. And then you know, you have...
So it's like they don't... He's not Matthew's backup. I mean, he can play next to him.
I will tell you this. I will tell you that when Dan Sorensen is on his game, he's a playmaker. I mean, he comes up and he causes turnovers. He's picked the ball off. He's caused fumbles. He has some tackles for losses. They bring him in blitz situations, and he's gotten there. But he hasn't shown that this year yet. Now, if you're a coach, do you say, I know what I can get out of this guy when he is at his peak and at his best. And do you wait for that to happen? Or do you say, you know what? And I think they're saying, hey, you know what? We're gonna give this guy this for the first quarter of the season. If he's not doing what we need him to do, we're going to have to put him down and put and make that adjustment that Jake said. So I think that's kind of where they're looking at.
We've got Tim Gunhart in studio back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Timmy, let's hear from Eric Bieniemy now. He was asked about the Clyde Edwards-Helaire fumble and what he said to Clyde after the game.
You know what? And you got to understand, I've been in that situation as a player. So as a former player, I know I didn't want anybody speaking to me. Okay? And I know Clyde didn't want to talk to anyone because obviously emotions are running high. But when the dust settles, the only thing that you want to do is put your arm around them. Okay? Nobody goes out there to intentionally fumble the ball. Nobody goes out there to intentionally throw an interception. But those are things that we can't take for granted in those defining moments. We got to do a better job of taking care of the football. And when it's all said and done, Clyde will learn from this. You know, Clyde's a tremendous football player. He's a great kid. And we're looking forward to him winning more games than helping us to win more games than what we ever could imagine. So I'm fired up and excited about making sure that our guys put that game behind them and continue chopping wood.
Continue chopping wood. So do you guys want to talk a little bit about that play?
I sure do.
So, listen, Baltimore knew the Chiefs were going to run the ball. All right. They knew that. They were going to run the clock out and kick a field goal. So what they did is they brought a bunch of guys up into the box. And Looney Tooney. And this, you know, in the heat of the action, listen, you got to be better. You just got to be better. But it's not as easy as it looks. So what happened was there was a one technique on his play side, and there was a slide that they had. It's what we call a gang call, where now the center's got to go fight across the one technique, which is on the play side, which is his outside eye. The backside guard has got to reach all the way across to that one technique, which he's probably going to be slanting that way anyways, because they brought the linebacker up into that gap above Tooney. And so they had really like five guys to one side, and they had to reach all those guys. So what happened is we did what we call a RICO, or he left his hand to give the center an opportunity to get his head across on that one technique. And by doing that, it caused a little bit of hesitation slash, you know, he put himself about a half man behind, And as he left his hand there, the dude from Penn State, the rookie, came up into that gap and beat him across his face. And he tried to lunge and get him, and he didn't. And because that guy, obviously, is very athletic, was able to get in the backfield, and it didn't look like it was the cleanest handoff in the world. It also looked like, and I've seen this from different angles, that Creed Humphreys was a little bit, it looked like he almost snapped it a little bit early. He kind of got away with a flinch. And when he flinched, that caused the snap to be a little bit late. So he was a little bit behind. So the whole mechanism of the offensive line reaching on this gang technique, which is everybody's got to go a gap farther, it's kind of like the outside zone at KU, where everybody's reaching one man, and you really have to be athletic and get across to the next guy. It's not an easy scheme, but that scheme had to be implemented because of the defense that was being presented to that offense at the time. Now, if I was Mahomes in a perfect world, but if you asked him, and now listen, I didn't really see the backside. There's a way to audible out of that because you're loaded to one side and you're running into that overload, which is not easy. But I think they just said, listen, if we can get 2 or 3 yards or run the clock, that's basically what we're trying to do anyways. So let's not confuse things. It's really loud. You're on the road. And the last thing you need is, a bunch of guys not on the same page where all of a sudden there's a penetration where it causes a turnover. Well, it happened anyways because of a miscommunication / mental error by Joe Tooney. He did not need to leave a hand on that one technique because the backside guard was coming. So the center knew, all right? The center knew that he had help on the backside. So he could really shoot his head across and shoot his body across because if that one technique slants weak, he's covered. But it was just a bunch of things that happened. Number one, the snap looked like he almost snapped it a little bit early, and then he held it and then he went, which caused him to be a little late with the snap. And, he realized that he had to get across that guy's face, which is, I'm telling you, you're playing against a really, really good athlete at the point of attack, and you're trying to get your head across as a center. That is not a world you want to live in. So I think Joe Tooney would have done that. Now, if that linebacker didn't walk up into that gap, then that's what you do. You Rico, you give him a hand and give him just – all you got to do is get him to turn his shoulder a tiny bit, and it gives that center an opportunity to close the door on him. But that guy walked up, and he didn't recognize that, and it was just – a negative play. So once again, it's all about the communication. It's all about the feel. It's all about the understanding of offensive line play. There's little things that happen in a game that nobody sees. Nobody sees because you don't watch the offensive line. And if you do, you don't understand what these concepts are that will just screw everything up. If you just, all it took was Joe Tooney to put one hand to the right for a second, not a half of a second, a millisecond, in order to cause that play to go bad.
That is a tremendous breakdown. And so a dope like me that doesn't really understand offensive line play that well, I wanted to go back and I watched that play several times over because I wanted to see why was that guy in the backfield? Because it clearly, I think the reason Edwards-Helaire is not a fumbler, as Andy Reid said, he never fumbled yet in his NFL career. And it clearly seemed like he got surprised that he got hit when he did, and it was just all it took was a little tap because he didn't think any contact was coming yet.
Right.
And so, okay, why did that guy get in the backfield like that, and who did he beat? And my first assumption was that it was Orlando Brown because I just saw that it came from that side of the line.
Sure, sure. Brown was reaching one more man out.
Right, right. And I thought, oh, boy, that would be something if the guy that the Chiefs traded to acquire just got beat by the guy they drafted with his draft pick. And then I saw it was Tooney that looked like he had that responsibility.
Yeah.
But then as a guy, like, I'm watching it going, but I don't know, maybe Tooney wasn't really, because he did, like you said, I saw that he went to strike the other guy first, and so I have no idea what the responsibility is. So that's amazing to hear from you, that breakdown of all it took was that one little hesitation, one little move.
So the call on the line of scrimmage would have been the center's calling to the backside guy, hey, we got to slide, which means now that this backside guard, the right guard and the center are working a combination slide block up to the backside backer. On the front side, you have a deuce call. All right. Now, that deuce call, it basically is the guard on the front side and the tackle are working together for 99, who was the front side backer. Now, when Tooney saw the nose tackle in that one technique, he realized that at the point of attack that the center was going to have issues with getting his head across, and the last thing you want is penetration at the point of attack. So he basically did the center a solid. Now, I don't know if the center called Ace or said Rico or said help or whatever, because if he said that, then now Tooney's got to do that. He's got to do that, and he's got to be able to react and get up to that backer. I'm just telling you, when you have an athletic backer like that 99 kid is from Penn State, and he's at the point of attack, and he's walking up and creeping up, you can't do that. And now maybe the center didn't see that because he had a one technique, and it's hard to see through a guy. Or maybe he did and didn't say anything, and Tooney was just saying, you know, as an experienced guy, hey, listen, I know I got to help this center because, you know, this guy's rearing up the field in a sure run spot that's going to cause a big-time negative play and could cause a fumble. So, once again, it's this communication and feel and understanding of each other that they don't have yet.
So, bottom line, that was the key there. Yeah. Bottom line, this is the type of thing. We talked about how this offensive line was going to take a while to gel, because there are five new guys that are all playing together. This happens in week 8 or 9. Is it a different story?
It's a different story. It is a different story. And, you know, Andy Heck, I don't know if you have the sound on it, he talked about these guys and how he loves these guys. And I do, too. I think this is going to be a really good offensive line. There's three things these guys do that are really good. Number one is they are tough. They are tough, physical guys. Number two, they finish blocks when they get on them. And number three, I think overall these guys have done a pretty nice job of trying to establish the run game for the Chiefs, because they got to have some sort of run game. They got to have some sort of other option. Now, listen, we never want to take the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands. But you got to have that defensive coordinator just maybe second-guessing every once in a while on some of the coverages and some of the blitz packages they want to run in order to stop the pass. So if you have a run, you have a gap run, which is a counter power, or you have an outside zone, then you have an opportunity to maybe surprise them. So you got to have a little bit of running game. I like this team, but this offensive line, they're just not on the same page yet, but they're working that way.
Nikusi and Rico, you know, that's how they got Gotti. The Rico Act.
Well, that's how they got the Chiefs, because there was too much of a Rico on the front side.
Great breakdown, Grunty. I loved hearing that. But also, hold on ball.
He's been waiting to say that for about 15 minutes now.
Yes. Everybody has some blame to go around. Hold on to the
freaking ball. Let me try this, too. Let me see if I can get you to say something else that's going to piss him off. Ready? One of you guys say that Clyde's not a fumbler. That's not who he is.
He's not a fumbler.
Well, absolutely he is. He is the fumbler.
Hey, you hit one home run, you're not a home run hitter. Nicky Lopez has hit two home runs this year. Is he a home run hitter?
If you fumble the ball with the game on the line and you lose the game, you're a fumbler.
So a guy that fumbles 1 out of 17 starts is a fumbler?
He's a fumbler. He fumbled the game away. How can you call him not a fumbler?
I am not getting involved.
The best part earlier, when we played the Andy Reid clip earlier this week,
Andy goes, he's not a fumbler.
That's not who he is.
He is now.
And Jason, that's exactly who he is.
So Nicky Lopez, a home run hitter, by the way. We got that
now.
Lopez, a home run hitter.
You can tell.
Sure he is.
You can tell. You can tell how.
Absolutely.
You can tell how Jake was raised.
Jake digs his heels in.
Jake was raised, if he didn't put his dishes in the dishwasher or in the sink, then he was a slob.
No, they went in the dishwasher.
In the dishwasher.
You washed them off all the way.
You washed them off.
And they put it in the dishwasher.
And if he forgot one time, he was a slob.
That's right.
If you break one dish, you're a dish breaker.
Yeah, you're a dish breaker. Correct. And if you don't put your dishes away one time in the dishwasher, you're a slob. Sarah yelled at me yesterday.
Is this a pig sty? Do we live in a pig sty?
She yelled at me yesterday.
This is where this is coming from.
She yelled at me yesterday because I forgot to push my chair in after dinner.
Yeah.
And she goes, you know what? You weren't raised correctly.
You need to have manners.
And so did your mother ever tell you about, Sarah, I always push a chair and I forgot one time I was, you know, she's like, You didn't push a chair.
I'm just going to say this.
So,
like,
Chip, that's why it's Jake, the most recent. You know, just,
what's your most recent actions?
Most, you know what? You're only as good as your last play, right?
That's right. Right. You, what are your most recent actions?
My recent action is that I was not raised properly.
If my kids flush the toilet one time, that does not make them toilet flushers. They most of the time, don't flush the toilet.
I will tell you this, and this
sounds
is
like
this
your
is,
problem, man.
So, it is my problem.
So CJ, my son, is dating a really nice gal named Kelsey, right?
All right.
And in our house, we really... I have been horrible about leaving the seat up, right? And it's just the boys have done it, and the girls have had their own bathroom, so it's not really like... But, you know, Sarah's complained over the years. Put the seat down. And she, this Kelsey, she's like, you know what? In our house, if you left this, you know, and if you left the seat up, you were done. And you know what? It's made me relearn every time now I put the seat down because I feel so bad. So I've learned. So even so, Clyde, 3 points of pressure, keep it tight, and you won't be a fumbler. Just like I am no longer a guy that doesn't push my chair in and or leave the seat.
And guess what? Today, push your chair in. Guess what? You push your chair in.
You know what? You can always get better. Life is about learning from your experiences.
You think he's a fumbler after one?
No.
What do you say?
What's his most recent action? What's the last game?
Last play he filmed.
Ah, there you go. He's a fumbler.
We'll be right back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Before we get into Grunny's picks, anything that needs to be said about last week's football game between Bishop Meade and St. Thomas Aquinas?
A typical, really, really good football game.
Mm-hmm.
And...
say it.
We won.
Say it. Undefeated.
I'm still undefeated.
There it is. And I'm completely defeated.
Still undefeated. Now, yeah, so I guess just came out that Aquinas may be 4A next year, or in the next football cycle.
That's unfortunate for 4A schools.
Yeah. It's
a lot of
I don't know how those 4A schools like Miege are going to be able to compete.
I know.
Wow.
And St. James, I believe, is still 4A. So... looks like all the Catholic schools in...
It's bad news for them in sports like volleyball and soccer, Nate, yeah.
Yeah.
Now who do you play this week?
Rockhurst.
Whoa.
Tonight at the Rock. Big game.
What do you think of that?
I think it's going to be another tough game. Another tough game. Rockhurst, very good. Chris Donahoe has done a great job over there. So,
if you could just win one game, which would you rather win, Aquinas or Rockhurst?
Well, I have since I've never been involved in a Miege or Rockhurst game. They would probably be, you know, listen.
You win a piece of the Rock.
I would like to win a Rockhurst game.
Yeah.
You know, listen, the rivalry is Aquinas and Miege. That's the big rival. So just like.
Congrats, man.
You know, KU and Missouri used to be the big rivalry. It's the same thing. Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Now let me get your picks.
Yeah.
What do you think? Let's get some college football picks. What about a battle of 3-0 teams? Kansas State, number 25 in the land, at Oklahoma State. What's the line, Jake? Can you give us the line at least to help us out? Somewhat of a guideline
here.
They
were 6. You're talking about Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State hosting Kansas State.
They were a 6-point favorite early in the week.
Okay, we'll go with that.
As we check it now.
It smells right.
6.
Although I think K-State's going to win.
The line has...
Who's the quarterback?
Not moved. Still 6.
They're going to play 2 quarterbacks, K-State.
K-State getting 6 points on the road.
Yeah.
Howard and Lewis are going to play.
Yeah, Skylar Thompson, to me, is the heart and soul of that team. I think they're going to be... They're really a good football team, and they're really, really well coached. But it's going to take a little bit of time to adjust without having Skylar in there. So it'll be... I like Oklahoma State.
What about...
to cover?
Yeah.
Mizzou, what are they favored by? 1.5?
1.5.
At Boston College at 11 a.m. You know about playing at Boston College, don't you?
Boston College is a lot better football team this year.
They lost their starting quarterback 2 weeks ago, but yeah, whatever.
Did they?
Yeah, they did.
The kid from Notre Dame?
Boston College. I don't know. What's his name? yeah, whatever.
Well, I'll take your word for it. Well, if they did do that, then obviously Missouri should have success there. Boston College is a better football team this year than they were over the last couple years. But, you know, if they lost their quarterback, guys, the quarterback is so integral to every program. So, if they they lost them, they lost them.
Kansas at Duke.
Yeah, Duke. Okay. Although I was disappointed in Kansas last week. I was hoping that those games were behind us, where they kind of gets away from them in the second half. I think that KU will keep it closer. I think Coach Leipold has done a really nice job. And listen, you got to change the culture there. It's going to take a little bit of time. There's still guys on that team that are kind of have that feeling that once things go bad, they go bad. And they've got to kind of flush that out of their system and keep fighting and keep battling. And I think they will. I think Coach Leipold will do a good job of trying to change that culture. And hopefully this week it'll be a closer game. You know, I'm rooting. I want KU to win, obviously. But if I was putting my money down, which I wouldn't, I think Duke's probably going to win the game.
Give me the score between the Chiefs and the Chargers.
Yeah, you know, gosh, I just want the Chiefs to win this game. Whether it's by 3, 7, or 10, I don't know what it's going to be. The Chiefs, they need a bounce-back game. They got to play better defensively. Let's say the Chiefs 24-17, they win the game.
24-17, the same score that Adam Kaplan gave us.
Yeah.
So it sounds like 24-17 is what you go with. Jake Pounders, Nate Bucati, Jake Gutierrez, Tim Grunhardt, thank you so much. My name is Stephen St. John. Have a wonderful weekend right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.